Shanti Bhakti Vedanta Sarasvati. Namaste Saraswati Devi, Guru there were 10 verses spoken by the ladies in the wrestling arena as Krishna was wrestling with Sanura and Balaram with Mastika. You're not going to keep rattling that, are you? Get all the rattling done. And these four verses, or the six prior verses, they were discussing how the wrestling with these huge persons, giant wrestlers, was. Are you going to do your bag rattling now, Tiki? Why don't you get it all done with it once?
Yeah, we'll stop rattling.
But why don't you do it quickly? Everyone take out your bags and rattle them. So in the midst of describing the unfairness of the wrestling match of the combatants, Krishna wrestling with Chanura, because Krishna after all was such a delicate boy looking boy, and Chanura was a mountain of a man, powerful. So in describing the inconsistency of the incompatibility of the components, really the ladies who are watching the wrestling match were describing the beauty of Krishna. And when they saw the beauty of Krishna, which was their first time seeing Krishna, they thought, Akshanvantam phalamidam na param vidama. There's nothing more wonderful that the eyes can see than this. This is the perfection of eyesight. This is what our eyes are meant to do, to see Krishna. And before seeing Krishna, practically speaking, it's like might as well be blind, because unless we see Krishna, we're not seeing anything. The function of the eyes are not being fulfilled. So although they were describing the incompatibility of the wrestlers, really they were describing the beauty of Krishna, which led them to the conclusion that they expressed in these four verses, that if we're so fortunate to have the perfection of our eyes right before us in the exquisitely unparalleled beauty of Krishna, then how fortunate are the residents of Vrindavan, because every day they would see Krishna. So the first verse in those talked about in general how fortunate are the residents of Vrindavan, because there in Vrindavan Krishna plays his flute, and in the company of Balaram goes out and herds the cows. And the sound of the cowbells, the dust, everything is so beautiful, and Krishna is right there. Then in the second of the four verses, they're thinking about the Braja Gopis, who always drink with their eyes the form of Krishna. And the Mathura ladies thinking, what piety must they have performed? Austerities and piety they must have performed in previous lives to get them the opportunity to see Krishna now. Because the concept is that one doesn't gain things by one's own power. One acts in a pious way and one gets good results. So much more of a pious way of thinking. So much more a God-conscious way of thinking, that everything doesn't depend on me. If I act in a particular way, then by the grace of God, I get a good result. And if I act in another kind of a way, also by the potency of the Lord, I get another kind of result. So everyone in this world, they have a mixture of results. There's happiness, there's misery, there's anxiety, there's peace. There's different combinations of the modes of material nature that infect and afflict everyone. No one, no being in this world, from the topmost person of Lord Brahma to the lowest person, can avoid being controlled by his fate and the three modes of material nature, sattva-gun, rajagun, and tamagun. So according to the particular mixture of the modes of material nature that afflict us and control us, we get differing amounts of happiness, differing amounts of distress and mixtures of the two. So it is the austerities, they're saying, what pious activities, what difficulties, forsaking the material world, must have these gopis done in previous lives to get them the opportunity in this life to see Krishna every day. Because Krishna's loveliness is the only abode of beauty, fame, and opulence. And again, beauty and Krishna's loveliness is the abode of these qualities. That means that these qualities of beauty, fame, and opulence reside in Krishna's transcendental form. So why does Krishna's form is so wonderful? So that's the second verse, what austerities. Then the third verse is how whatever they were doing, the Braja Gopis, whatever they were doing, whether they were gathering cow dung, they were riding on swings, or taking care of their crying babies, or sprinkling the ground with water, cleansing their houses, whatever they were doing, their mind was full of Krishna because of their love for Krishna, because of the depth of their absorption in thoughts of Krishna and their love for Krishna. Therefore, their consciousness was always absorbed in Him. So we find ourselves, we try to absorb our consciousness in Krishna, and then in 2 seconds, it's knocked over because our absorption is very shallow. But the gopis, whatever they were doing externally, internally, they were thinking of Krishna. And this is only possible through great, great love for Krishna. And by this exalted consciousness, the third verse ends, the Braja Gopis automatically acquired all desirable things. Because by thinking about Krishna and going about their lives, everything came to them. They didn't plan on getting everything else, and also sometimes thought about Krishna, but only by thinking about Krishna. Everything came to them, and this consciousness is the most exalted consciousness. Cannot be imitated. We should act in a practical way, but we should still know what exalted consciousness is and what to speak of the most exalted consciousness is. So then, and then the fourth and final verse in this section is what is the perfection of this is that when Krishna comes home and he leaves Braja, because what is his duty every day? He goes out every day with the boys and the cows, and every evening, not evening, but just as the before the sun sets, there's a certain time when Krishna returns, especially in Vrindavan, that time of the day is very, very, something very, very special about it. When Krishna goes out in the morning, all the residents of Vrindavan, their minds follow Krishna as he goes out. And then when he comes back, they've been thinking about him all day. And then, as this verse describes, everyone, and he's speaking specifically about, the Mathura ladies are speaking about the Braja Gopis, the young girls, they quickly come out of their houses to see him. Sometimes they're stopped by their parents or in-laws. This is described in, because this in other places in the Bhagavatam, and they say, "What are you trying to do? Are you trying to kill me?" This is what it means for them to see Krishna. Are you trying to take out my eyes? Are you trying to kill me? I have no life. If I cannot see Krishna, I don't have life. So you just, I can just contrast that with my consciousness. If I don't get my prasadam on time, I don't have life. Or if I don't get this, if whatever, anything. But for them, their consciousness was focused like a laser upon their relationship with Krishna. Anything and everything for Krishna. Again, this can't be imitated, but this is the highest standard of love. This is the love of the residents of Vrindavan, and specifically here of the Braja Gopikas. So Krishna, they would live to just get that glimpse of Krishna when he was coming back. And then they would come out to see him, and as he would walk on the road, his smiling face, out of the corner of his eye sometimes, and sometimes he would fully turn his face and look at them. And when he would look at them, by the potency of his loving glance, he would enter into their hearts through their eyes. And when he would look at them, he would catch them. They would be staring at him. This is described at the end of the 15th chapter of the 10th canto, when Krishna returns from the forest after killing Dinukasura. They would be looking at him, and then suddenly Krishna would turn and catch them looking at him, and then immediately they would be like this, and only would look at him out of the corner of their eyes, and they'd have bashful smiles. All this is described in the verse. But his smiling face mercifully glancing upon him. So again, the Mathuravasis are thinking that the residents of Vrindavan, specifically the Braja Gopikas, are the most fortunate souls in existence. Because, why? Because they had the opportunity to see Krishna. And here is the only time we saw Krishna. And look at him, he's fighting. And he's in such a difficult situation, fighting these giants. So let's read some of the comments of Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur on these verses. The first one, how fortunate just the residents of Vrindavan, because he wanders about in Vrindavan enacting his many pastimes. Here, and who is he? He is Krishna Bhagavan, the one who possesses all opulence. And he's dressed in such a charming way, forest garlands, his feet are worshipped by Lord Shiva, and goddess Rama, the goddess of fortune, and he vibrates his flute as he tends the cows in the company of Balaram. So how difficult it is to understand that this boy who's playing his flute, who's wearing a garland of forest flowers, the supreme, unlimitedly powerful cause of all causes, supreme personality of Godhead. And therefore, because it's difficult to understand, there is always an interdispersion of Krishna's Aishwarya Leela, his unlimitedly powerful pastimes, in the 10th canto along with his Nada Leela. So here's Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's purport. There's no purports in BBT in these verses. So in this verse, the wives of the Jagic Brahmanas, that was described in chapter 23, or some ladies who share the same mentality express their prema, which is mixed with an awareness of Krishna's opulences, due to their torment of not having his association. So for them, it's a torment that they can't be with Krishna. In the material world, the conditioned souls, Krishna Mule Sayyid, Bhogavan Chakari, they have, instead of forgetting Krishna, Anadya Bahimukh, they turn their back on Krishna, and instead of missing Krishna, it's Bhogavan Chakari, they end up with desires to enjoy. So, it's really, we've turned our back on him. But these ladies, they were not like that. Becoming intolerant of the unjust behavior of the onlookers, meaning the people who were organizing this wrestling match, Kamsa especially, the ladies condemned the city of Mathura because of their pain at seeing Krishna in what they consider an unfair wrestling match. Thus they praise Braja and its inhabitants, and by that they criticize Mathura and its residents. They said, how astonishing it is. Materialistic people cannot understand the human-like form that Krishna displays in Braja. Krishna wanders around, engaging in various playful activities according to his own desires. We in Mathura are most unfortunate because we simply persecute him like this. There he is, the most perfect, exalted person in existence, the supreme person, and then he comes to Mathura, our city, and what do? What kind of a welcome do we give him? We have him fight these wrestlers who are 5 times his size and 100 times as strong as he is. So how unfortunate is our situation. We persecute him, and these people are simply watching. Though Braja is just a forest, it is most fortunate for their Krishna played his flute and he blissfully engaged in pastimes as the Brijbasis looked on with bliss. So different from Mathura is from Vrindavan, they're saying. There, everyone loved him, and here, we make him fight with these wrestlers and endanger his life. And then the second verse again was, what austerities the gopis may have performed to see his form, which is the abode. His lovely form is the only abode of beauty, fame, and opulence. It is self-perfect, ever fresh, and extremely rare. So, we talked about yesterday, we talked about Krishna's form being self-perfect, that it doesn't need anything else to be beautiful. It's independently beautiful. And bhushana bhushanangam. When ornaments are placed upon Krishna's form, it's the ornaments that are beautified. And it's ever fresh. If you can see him every day, and one will not become satiated or disgusted, as Prabhupada would say, because his beauty is ever fresh and revealing more aspects and extremely rare. That means that very, very rare, and we might take it for granted, but it's very rare that one actually can see the form of Krishna. We can take it for granted because we see Balava. Here we don't see Radhabalava unless you bring him. But in Melbourne you see Radhabalava every day. So forth. And you don't get tired of seeing him. So here's Vishnu's purport. Those who have accrued heaps of pious activities are born in the land of Braja. Sakyam Vicharu Krita Punya Punya. And amongst all those who are born in the land of Braja, the gopis are the best. That is expressed in this verse. The lady said, what austerities did the gopis do? If anyone is omniscient, then please tell us what austerities they performed. We will perform the same austerities and be born as gopis in Braja. They drink the nectar of Krishna's beauty, while we in the arena drink the poison of seeing him becoming injured. We sit here filled with fever from the tips of our nails to the tips of our hair. Toenails, probably, from the bottom to the very top. By mentioning that as a result of austerities, the gopis could see the beauty of Krishna's form. They also indicate that it resulted in being embraced by Krishna's arms, which could not be expressed in words on that occasion. The lady said, one should not say that Krishna is most excellent because of his superior beauty. Rather, the essence of all beauty is his very swarup. So that's quite a statement. Not that his beauty is the best beauty, he's the most beautiful, but he's all beauty. The sum total of all beauty. It's a concept that's so wonderful to conceive of, because we, in this world, we see someone has a little bit of beauty, and that person has a little bit of beauty, and that person has a little bit of beauty, and that person has some beauty, and that person has a little more beauty, and that person has a little less beauty. So if you took that beauty, if you could extract it from the person, and took all the beauty from all the different people, like someone may have a beautiful forehead, and someone may have a beautiful nose, and someone may have a beautiful voice, and someone may have a beautiful eyes, and if you took the sum total, you could extract that beauty out. And Krishna is the essence of that. And in fact, he's the reservoir of all beauty, the source of all that beauty. Everyone else just gets just a half of a particle, of drop of the unlimited beauty of Krishna. So how beautiful is that? How beautiful is unlimitedly beautiful? So it's not two times more beautiful than the most beautiful person in this world, or 10 times more beautiful, or 100 times more beautiful, but unlimitedly more beautiful. So for all we can do is this Chandra Shaka Nyaya. Let's say it is something like this, because with our finite minds we cannot conceive of Krishna's beauty, which is unlimited. But it may be objected, since Krishna's form is being exhibited on the earth, which is inferior to his own spiritual realms, therefore the beauty of Lord Narayan in Mahavaikuntha, the best of worlds, must be even sweeter than this. To asamudham, to this objection, the ladies reply with the word asama udham, indicating there is no beauty even equal to his. This, what to speak of any greater? But then, from where did Krishna acquire this beauty? This they answer with the word ananya siddham. It is self-perfect, meaning that such beauty is innate. It is within Krishna. That may be so, but if the gopis are constantly seeing this one form, it will no longer be so amazing after some time. The ladies reply, Krishna's form becomes newer at every moment. Anusava abhinavam. It is forever increasingly amazing. So if this is the case, then the women of all other lands should also go there and take pleasure in seeing Krishna. No, the ladies reply, this form is unattainable even for the goddess Lakshmi. Granted, Krishna's beauty is the super excellent quality, but Narayan and others possess the full measure of 6 opulences and are designated as Bhagawan. The ladies countered this objection by saying, Ekanta Dham, Krishna alone is the exclusive abode and topmost reservoir of all the six opulences, beginning with fame, yash, beauty, sriya, and so on. Then the first, second, third verse. So the ladies of Braja are so fortunate because they drop everything. They're always and constantly thinking and singing about him in ecstasy, crying, their voices are choked up. And whatever they're doing, cleaning the house, sprinkling the ground with water, taking care of their crying babies, they're in ecstasy. But it's because of the depth of their thinking of Krishna. So Vishwanath comment. And even while doing household duties, the gopis were not stopped from drinking the nectar of Krishna's sweetness. Because their relationship with Krishna was unlimitedly deep, the most deep. That means they were fixed in it constantly. And nothing could remove it. Their relationship from Krishna and their thoughts of Krishna from their consciousness. There's nothing. Nothing. It didn't make a difference what Krishna did. It didn't make a difference what Kamsa did. It didn't make a difference what anyone did or could do or would do. They were in love with Krishna to the highest degree. The lady said, while milking the cows and doing other chores, such as swinging or sprinkling water on the ground, the Braja gopis would sing about Krishna's name, form, and qualities and have visions of him. Because in separation from Krishna, Krishna manifests. In this way, they taste the sweetness of Krishna with both their tongues and their eyes without interruption. Exalted personalities like Brahma keep Krishna in their minds. Krishna himself, however, due to being completely attached and arakta-diya to the Braja gopis, always carries them in his heart. Arukrama tityana. This shows the supremacy of the gopis' good fortune. They're the most fortunate because they have the most love for Krishna. And because they have the most love for Krishna, their consciousness is simply and always fixed and focused upon him with great love. And the result of that from Krishna's side is that he and the gopis have captured him within their hearts. So this is Krishna consciousness. And then finally, the final verse with a very short purport. Krishna going in the morning, coming back in the evening, and they immediately come out to see him. Nothing can stop them. How pious they must have been to be able to see Krishna as he walks on the road coming back, his face mercifully glancing upon them. Purport by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. The ladies said, when Krishna goes to the forest from Braja in the morning and returns in the evening, the gopis hear his flute and they run out of their houses. They meet Krishna in a small grove situated amongst the cowpaths, and seeing that they are suffering due to separation, Krishna mercifully glances upon them to fulfill their desires. This is the fortune of the women of Braja. In the Krishna book, Prabhupada explains on these, actually right after that verse about the milking the cows and the like that. Prabhupada says in the Krishna book, the gopis give a perfect example of how one can execute Krishna consciousness even while performing various types of material engagements. By constantly being absorbed in the thought of Krishna, one cannot be affected by the contamination of material activities. So it's the consciousness. It is the consciousness that is important, and the consciousness that we want to develop is Krishna consciousness. Consciousness of Krishna, whatever we're doing, and how to develop that. So many instructions. The whole Bhagavad Gita is meant us to do that. Sarvadhamam Pratyajam, Amikam Sharanam Braja. Think of Krishna always. Mam Anusmada Yudhyacha. Think of me doing activities, tetasa sabakamani maya sunyasya matpara buddhi yogam, machita satatambhava, for all activities and the results, think of me, think that Krishna has engaged me in this particular duty, and let me do it in such a way that he will be satisfied. So everything we should try to consciously connect with Krishna. Everything has a connection with Krishna by definition, because definition of the Absolute Truth. Absolute Truth means that it is all-inclusive. It's that which is true in every time, place, circumstance. So, because Krishna, everything comes from him. Janma yasya taha. Hamsavasya prabhava matak sabam prabhatate. That everything comes from him. And everything is his energy. Even the souls are, this is, separated parts and parcels. Everything in existence has a connection with Krishna. So that, in the Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy, is reality. Everything is connected with Krishna. So illusion and Maya's specific function is to cause us to view things as separate from Krishna. And as soon as we view them as separate from Krishna, then we try to enjoy them for ourselves, thinking ourselves separate from Krishna. This is Maya's specific function. To put, it is a curtain. Maya jakani jakani katschanam, Kunti Devi says that Maya is like a curtain, and the curtain is placed between Krishna and everything in it that we see for a person who is influenced by the material energy. And what is the specific influence of the material energy? It causes us, again, as soon as we adopt a mood of I am the enjoyer, then immediately the curtain comes down and we cannot see Krishna, because we're not seeing Krishna because we're not the enjoyer. As soon as we make the choice or in the consciousness that I am here to enjoy, as soon as we have that mood and look at this world as if it is there for our enjoyment, then we cannot see Krishna. And as soon as, on the other hand, we see Krishna, then we cannot have a mood of enjoyment. We have a mood of service. That Krishna's things should be used in Krishna's service. So what do we do when we're in the material world, in the world of Maya, and trying to change our consciousness from being the enjoyer to the servant of Krishna? Trying to see, how do we change our consciousness from seeing the material world as the pleasure ground, the field of our activities for our pleasure, to the land of opportunity for service? How do we change the consciousness? Well, that's the purpose of exactly what we're doing all the time as devotees. We're trying to enact a great turning within the very core of our heart, a change of consciousness, like the second chapter of the second canto, or the third maybe, pure devotional service, the change of heart. There has to be a full change of heart. So Prabhupada says, by constantly being absorbed in thought of Krishna, one cannot be affected by the contamination of material activity. The gopis, therefore, are perfectly entranced, samadhi, the highest perfectional stage of mystic power. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is confirmed that one who is constantly thinking of Krishna is a first-class yogi amongst all kinds of yogis. Shadavan bhajate yomam. My dear friends, one lady told another, we must accept the activities of the gopis to be the highest form of piety. Otherwise, how could they have achieved the opportunity of seeing Krishna both morning and evening? In the morning, when he goes to the pasturing ground with his cows and cowherd boyfriends, and in the evening when he returns with them, playing on his flute and smiling very brilliantly. Because Krishna has very white teeth, except that sometimes they're colored with red from chewing pan. But white teeth, like white as a jasmine flower. So the ladies were in anxiety because Krishna was beautiful, delicate Krishna. And again, this is how they measure success, to see this beautiful form of Krishna. So how is Krishna there in so much anxiety to see Krishna fighting with these wrestlers? It was so deeply disturbing to them because of they had great love for Krishna. If we don't have love for Krishna, we will hear this and think, oh, it's just a story and I know the ending anyway, that Krishna kills Kamsa. But the gopis and the Mathura ladies didn't see him that way because of the depth of their relationship with Krishna. They felt misery to have entertained the thought that Krishna may be suffering in this wrestling fight. And similarly, although it had a happy ending, Sukadeva Goswami didn't want to even tell Maharaj Prakrit the story of Krishna Kaliya, because in that story Krishna was going to be wrapped in the coils of a snake for one muhurta, 48 minutes. And that would cause Maharaj Prakrit, he was fearing that would cause Maharaj Prakrit to have a heart attack or something, or cause him so much pain, because the relationship was so real and so deep. Like if we hear someone who is beloved to us is in a difficult circumstance, we feel the pain because the person is beloved to us. When we don't feel that, is because we don't have a relationship with the person. So for these ladies of Mathura, they had such a relationship with Krishna and they had heard about him, but now was the first time they saw him. So Krishna understood their anxiety, so he decided to end the wrestling match. Sukadeva Goswami continued, as the woman spoke thus, O hero of the Bharatas, Sukadeva speaking to Maharaj Prakrit, Lord Krishna, the master of all mystic power, made up his mind to kill his opponent. Who was his opponent? Huh? No? No wrestling. Huh?
Janora.
Here's the comment of Vishnu. Though the ladies were talking amongst themselves, Krishna, being the best of yogis, could hear it. Now that's interesting, because that means that when we're talking amongst ourselves, Krishna, the best of yogis, can hear. But just like when, like if you're walking in the gallery and some people are just like, blah, 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 you don't want to hear, because the talking is just on such a low level. Who wants to hear what they're saying? So, I mean, it doesn't attract the consciousness at all. So similarly, Krishna's consciousness, although he's the best of yogis, is not attracted to anything but bhakti. So because these ladies were speaking with such bhakti, Krishna, the best of yogis, immediately heard them. Like when you're walking in the mall and people are talking, it's not that you can't hear them, but just there's no desire to hear them. So similarly, and then if someone was talking about something wonderful, then yes, consciousness would be piqued, the ears would perk, and you'd hear very, very carefully. So similarly, Krishna wants to hear the words, the prayers, the thoughts of his devotees, because they are full of bhakti and he acts on them. He cannot ignore them. So he could hear it. Thus he decided to kill Chanura in order to keep these ladies who were very much attached to him from suffering. So why did he immediately want to kill Chanura? It's because the ladies were suffering. Why were they suffering? Because the wrestling match, Krishna was having fun wrestling, but the ladies were suffering. Out of affection for the two lords, Krishna and Balaram's parents, Devaki and Vasudeva, became overwhelmed with sorrow when they heard the women's fearful statements. They grieved, not knowing their son's strength. So it appears there's different kinds of statements I've noticed in this chapter. And from this statement, it appears that Vasudeva and Devaki were right there. But it would be hard because they were in chains. Or maybe they weren't. The situation isn't exactly hard to understand from what happens. Because it talks, at the end of the chapter, it will say that Krishna and Balaram released their mother and father from bondage. So it sounds like they were bound in some way. So, and they were right there, but that's hard to.
Krishna's a pretty evil kind of a character.
Yeah, but to do that in front of Krishna and Balaram, that they're certainly asking for trouble. But to do, I mean, that's really low, isn't it? You know, if they're, you know, bringing them in just to have a nice little wrestling match, and there you have his parents bound up, it's hard to understand. I mean, it's not diplomatic either. I mean, if he was trying to be a diplomat, he wasn't doing very well. But in any case, however the situation was, they became overwhelmed with sorrow just by hearing the women's fearful statements. They grieved, not knowing their son's strength. Because of their love, even though they would go in and out in knowing how powerful Krishna and Balaram were. And when they knew how powerful they were, they couldn't embrace Krishna and Balaram as their son. And when they didn't, they would worry about them. So they became overwhelmed with sorrow when they heard of the woman's fearful statement. So it sounds like, and then you could also say it sounds like they're not there because they have, somehow or another, they're hearing the statements, but if they were there, they would be seeing it, and they would be overwhelmed by sorrow, so much sorrow to see their babies having to fight with these wrestlers. So it's a little hard to understand. Pitarav refers to parents, Vasudev and Devaki, or his two fathers, Nanda and Vasudev. Lamenting over the situation, Krishna's parents thought, why didn't we keep our son at home? When leaving Braja, why didn't we tell Akrura not to bring Krishna and Balaram to this wrestling arena? Why did we allow them to participate in this corrupt exhibition? So there was lamentation. Nanda Maharaj was also disturbed. The parental affection of Krishna's mother and father covered their awareness of their son's incomparable strength, and thus they felt remorse. There is a suggestion that this ignorance of their son's power was temporary. 19. Lord Balaram and Mastika, expertly displaying numerous wrestling techniques, battled each other in the same way that Krishna and his opponent did. The harsh blows from the Supreme Lord's limbs felt like crushing lightning bolts upon Chanura, breaking every part of his body and causing him more and more pain and fatigue. So Krishna was obviously holding back because he was only using power of a thunderbolt. But he could have used a million, quadrillion thunderbolts of power. So in that way, this unlimitedly powerful wrestler from a limited sense, he was very powerful. He was being broken by Krishna's smashing and causing him more pain and fatigue. And he was a demon. Furious. Chanura attacked Lord Vasudev with the speed of a hawk. It struck his chest with both fists. Like that, Krishna's chest. no more shaken by the demon's mighty blows than an elephant struck with a flower garland, Lord Krishna grabbed Chanura by his arms. So those two same arms together, Krishna grabbed them. And this was, Krishna saw Balaram do this. And also he himself did this, something similar to Vatsasura. So he knew that trick. He grabbed them by their legs and he'd swing them around. And so he took them by his arms. He swung them around several times. And then after swinging them around, he hurled them to the ground with great force. And his clothes, hair, and garland scattering, the wrestler fell down dead. Like a huge festival column collapsing. How do you feel? You feel very happy about it. How do you feel? What do you think? Very good. It feels happy. Indradwaj, the word used in there, like a huge festival column collapsing. That's like we said. It's like when we go to when we drove to the Young's house. There was that, did you see that fellow filled with air on the left hand side? That one. So something like that. If you just take out the air, he goes. He's finished. Because Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says in Bengal, on the occasion of a certain festival, people erect a tall column in the form of a man and decorate it with flags and banners. Chanura collapsed on the ground just as a pole might fall. Similarly, Mastika struck Balabhadra with his fist. With his fist and was slain. Receiving a violent blow from the mighty Lord's palm, the demon trembled all over in great pain, vomited blood, and fell lifeless onto the ground like a tree blown down by the wind. Balaram Mastika struck Mastika with his palm. This is Vishwanath's comment. And Mastika fell down dead on the earth. Balaram also crushed him with his embrace. He grabbed him and scores him, crushed him. And the demon Mastika uttered foul words as he lay dying. So to the very end, demons. Confronted next by the wrestler Kuta, Lord Balaram, the best of fighters, playfully and nonchalantly killed him with his left fist. Then Krishna struck down the wrestler Sala in the head with his toes and tore him in half. The Lord dealt with Toshala in the same way, and both wrestlers fell down. That means two of them. He kicked them in the head and tore them in half. He held them with his toes and tore them in half. He has unlimited power. Chanura, Mastika, Kuta, Sala, and Toshala having been killed, the remaining wrestlers looked at their watches and saw they had other appointments. And they left. Krishna and Balaram then called their young coward boyfriends to join them. And in their company, the lords danced about and sported, their ankle bells resounding as musical instruments played. Vishwanath said, Krishna and Balaram danced about, celebrating their victory with their friends and relatives. Everyone except Kamsa rejoiced at the wonderful feat of Krishna and Balaram. The exalted brahmanas and great saints exclaimed, Sadhu, Sadhu. Very good, excellent. And this is the last comment on see what Prabhupada said on these points. It is understood that the best of the brahmanas who were Krishna's devotees were exclaiming, Sadhu, Sadhu, this is very good. The worst of the brahmanas, however, who were Kamsa's low class priests, were seriously grieving. Oh, what misfortune. answering stuff here. Any questions or comments? It's almost over. Kamsa's turn is next.
It's amazing that Kamsa had heard of the demise of so many powerful demons.
Yeah.
And this is the first time he's seen
it. He's seen it now. Except look what he saw too. They were fighting and fighting. He was probably, you know, thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, well, the one, it was time to go over and Krishna. And then ripped him in half with his toes.
A sensible man at that point might have sought another option of dealing with Krishna.
Yeah. But he was a committed asura.
Not many options at that point. Immediately after this, Krishna went, you know, on the dais for a second.
But there's something happened in between.
I'm not aware. Maybe.
Tomorrow, he's still here.
I mean, what he could have done, not run away from there.
He could have said, listen, Krishna, I'm sorry, I didn't really mean it, you know. Everyone makes mistakes, please forgive me. Listen, I apologize. I won't do it again. That's what Indra did. Lots of people do that one.
Indra's position was different.
Yeah, he wasn't a demon.
Indra has this big ego, he's a kamsa, you know. And he has big face, you know. What can he do at that time?
Well,
he's hoping against hope that maybe, you know, they are my nephews, maybe they'll spare me.
That's when you hear the next part, that's not what he's thinking. Mm-hmm. He's thinking something quite different. He goes, because he's so committed to his path of insanity that he goes even more crazy.
Wow.
He goes crazy, actually.
His destiny is already fixed. So the oracle will not go around also. He has to be killed by
It's interesting to see the development of the pastime and the rasas there, that Krishna's boys are just always in the spirit of fun.
Really boys, aren't they?
Yeah. But then they're brought to the point of heavy action by the...
You mean Krishna and Balaram?
By the mood of their devotees. As much as it was clear there that they acted in response to the mood and concern.
And also what we're hearing about at lunch about what Krishna... He didn't like what Kali was doing, but when his boys and the cows drank the water and died, Krishna actually became angry at him and said,
"You
gotta go." Everything happens because of Krishna's relationship with his devotees, Braja. That's prema rules Braja. And Yogamaya acts responsibly to the prema of the devotees, even more than the prema of Krishna. Tomorrow, Kamsa will lose his life, but he will gain his life too.
Beautiful.